These are the Kesey Tapes. U-Man and Favaz explore the backstories and interviews heard on Kesey, the longest-running rock station in the country.
Hello, everybody. It's the Kesey Tapes podcast. John Hewlett and Favaz. We do the morning show at Kesey 95 in St. Louis. All right, today we're doing another interview that Favaz did with a member of Rush. This time it's Alex Lifeson,
the guitar player. And another interview where I totally forgot that I talked to him. I think it was the only time I've ever interviewed him. It's on reel-to-reel machine, the reel-to-reel tape. And I have no idea what Rush record could have been he could have been promoting or whatever. And
you know the time frame?
Yeah, it was 12/1/98. I've got it actually written on the box. So, you know, to speak to any member of Rush, I've never spoken to Neil. I've interviewed Getty a bunch of times, and we've had Getty on the Kesey tapes. But you just feel kind of like dumb.
Yeah.
You know, and even with interviewing Alex, you know, even though I did it over the phone, you just feel like don't say anything stupid. You know?
Yeah, right.
And they're probably not like that, but you just feel that, you know, so.
And the other interesting thing about this is that, as Favaz says, this is on a reel-to-reel tape done in 1998. Favaz is speaking into a high-quality microphone. Lifeson is on the phone, and he sounds better than you do.
Way better.
In terms of quality
I don't know what
recording.
The deal is.
What the hell could be?
I don't know.
That's not the first time this has happened.
Yeah.
All right, so here we go. This is episode 140 of the Kesey Tapes.
2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3. Check. 1, 2, 3.
Good counter.
Hey, he can count.
Yeah, musician's got to be able to count. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Do it.
Okay.
You can hear me fine?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm surprised you didn't say you're a little muddy. Taking a deep breath before every good interview. That's what every good interviewer does.
Yes.
Deep
I was
breath.
Preparing myself.
In through the nose, out through the mouth.
So obviously this is going to be taped, and we'll just probably cut it up and play parts back. So if I say fuck or you say fuck, it's no big deal. We're not live.
Oh, encouraging cussing.
Yes, encouraging some curse words, yes.
Okay, Favaz from KG95 with me on the phone is Alex Lifeson of Rush, the guitarist. Alex, good morning. How are you, man?
I'm great, and you?
I'm doing fine. Where are you calling? You calling from home today?
I'm calling from home, just outside of Toronto.
That's nice. What's it like up there right now?
It's a beautiful fall day. The sun is shining. It's about 40 degrees Fahrenheit. A little bit of wind, but it's a gorgeous day.
Wow, no barometric pressure or anything like that?
Yeah, he knew it, man.
He knew it, yeah. He got up and checked the weather forecast before the interview.
That would be almost golf weather, don't you think?
Sure. In Canada? Yeah, absolutely. It's short sleeve shirt weather.
Yeah, we'll talk about golf later.
Okay.
We're talking to Alex about the new Rush discs, I should say, Different Stages Live. And it's the fourth live record from Rush, correct?
That's right, yep.
And this one I thought was kind of weird, Alex, when I heard this, that Getty did most of the work on this record as far as putting everything together and stuff like that. First of all, is that true? And if so, why did Getty get stuck with going through all the tapes?
Well, it's been actually, we did all of that together. We recorded the last two tours, about 45 shows on each tour. And that goes to Robert Scoville, who is our live sound engineer.
Mm-hmm.
He kind of goes through the tapes, whittles it down to what he feels are the 10 best shows, and then we take it from there. And in our case, we were very fortunate. Chicago happened to be one of those nights where the band was really on, right in the pocket, so the bulk of the material came from that one show. Once Paul Northfield, the engineer, established what the character of the live record was going to be, then it was just a matter of going through it. You know, I went down a few times in the early stages, and you know, once I knew that everything was happening and fine, then I kind of begged out. Ged lives about 5 minutes from the studio, so he didn't mind.
Ged, as in Getty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Never heard him referred to as Ged before.
Oh, I have, yeah.
Yeah. In on a daily basis just to check on how things were going. Plus, it's been a very difficult period this last year, and my heart was not in it as much as Ged's, and it became the thing that he needed to be focused on during this period.
I understand. Do you remember that Chicago show? Do you remember? Was it that special of a night, or
I remember it being a particularly good night. It was at the World Amphitheater, and Chicago's always a great place for us to play.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as St. Louis is, we have certain cities in America that have always been very special to us. And the crowd was great. The hall sounded good. And as I said, it was one of those nights where the band was really in the pocket. And really, that only happens, you know, a handful of times in the course of an 80 or 90 show tour, you know, that you could say those five or six shows were just spot on. And I think for most people listening to three different nights, they wouldn't really be able to tell much of a difference. But to us, of course, you get a sense of that feel and that synchronicity, you know.
Right.
And that was one of those shows.
So, you know, right before he goes into talking about the live shows, he said that his heart wasn't into it. Mm-hmm. I think this is what he was talking about. That was the death of Neil Peart's daughter.
Yeah.
And then his wife died months later. So I'm not sure if it's just the daughter at this point in time or if it was, you know, both. But, you know, you can understand why, you know, your bandmate, somebody that you've known forever, is not into it.
Right. You sure.
Know? Do you think you guys, when you listen back to Exit Stage Left and All the World's a Stage and all that, do you feel that Rush is a better band today than you guys were 15, 20 years ago?
We're certainly a different band. I think we're more... confident, and I think we're more well, there's a maturity in our playing that didn't exist in the past, and I think it pulls us back a little bit. And again, it's that confidence of having done this for so many years
and knowing you have an audience that will follow you no matter what.
True You know? and they died in 1997, a year ago.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. Before
and
this was recorded.
Mm-hmm. Doing. I mean, that's what the great thing is about this retrospective live thing. Having the material from 1978 shows the real contrast of where the band's been in 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
The Hammersmith stuff, it's on the edge. It's all the tempos are a little quicker. You know, you just got on stage, plugged in, and went for it. Whereas now it's a little more complex on stage. There are a lot more things to be aware of, to be cued into. So it's really quite a different approach in terms of the live energy.
We're speaking with Alex Lifeson.
That's really interesting there.
Yeah, he's cool.
He is. Smart guy. Yeah, talking about how early on it was pretty much adrenaline and, you know, flying by the seat of their pants and, you know, just being who they were. And then as the time went on, they started figuring out how to make things even better and to prepare in advance. And I wonder if that takes some of the spontaneity out of it, though.
Somewhat, I think it does. But I will say that what attracted me to Rush in the very beginning was his guitar, his tone, his guitar playing. It wasn't Geddy's voice or the drumming aspect of things. It was Alex Lifeson's guitar.
Yeah, because Geddy's voice takes a little getting used to initially when you first hear the band.
Yeah.
So that's not, I think you're probably very common as far as that goes with a lot of people who said, well, you know, it wasn't Geddy. Necessarily, but it was that guitar work.
Rush on KC95, and the third disc on Different Stages is that Hammersmith Odeon concert from 1978, correct?
Right.
In London. Boy, I would imagine the first time that you and Geddy heard that, you must have had some big smiles on your faces, because that thing was great, man.
Yeah, we did. That show was originally recorded for a BBC special. Geddy had a cold that night, and he went into the truck and listened to the first few songs, and you know, it takes his voice a little bit to warm up, and he really wasn't happy with it. It was a very relative thing. You know, we were playing, on average, six nights a week at that time, so it was not one of our better nights. Those tapes went into storage. We came across them a few years ago when they were moving things around at the office, and took them into a studio and put them up, and we're really quite surprised with the level of energy and how good it sounded. So that kind of sparked us onto this whole path of putting this retrospective together. But we did have a lot of smiles. You know, the material that we don't play a lot anymore that from that period of time. So it was kind of fun to hear it.
I must say, for me personally, it's great to hear Xanadu live.
Yeah.
Man. Number one, it's 11 minutes long on the album. Was it longer in concert? Or do you remember, or was it still so much involved as it was on the record?
Yeah, you know, I think when we first started touring that song, it was probably 3 or 4 minutes longer. We extended the opening and had a little more fun with it in the whole ethereal opening. But over the course of the years, we we medleyized it. So we'd mix it with
is that
something
a word?
Else.
Medleyized.
Medleyized.
Yes.
Wow, that's cool.
Hey, if everybody understands what you're saying, it's a word.
You know, and because it was such a long song and we were limited with the time that we could play. As a matter of fact, 2112 was another example of that. We never played it in its entirety because we couldn't afford to give 22 minutes or so of the set to one, basically one song.
Right.
So we always played a truncated version of it throughout.
That's why, in my opinion, they need to still get out there and tour, even without Neil, and do the first time around as a tribute, and after that, just keep going, because there's so much great music that, you know, they can still perform, and you got Getty still being able to sing the vocals. I say get out there, man. Why let this catalog just wither away and just be performed by other people when the people who made the music are still able to do it?
I agree to a certain extent, but at the same time, Rush fans identify with the drummer, Neil, identify with his lyrics. He was vital to the band, and, you know, that's why they don't want to do it, you know?
Why they don't want to do it. The fans don't want
the fans,
to do it.
I think, would probably like, you know, they Hell obviously yeah. they would love to see Getty and Alex perform again, but at the same time, they don't want to go out with their bud. Yeah. Right now they don't. So.
Years.
Although they have said recently that they're thinking of getting together to do things, Alex and Getty.
Yeah.
Do something. Yeah. Don't know what it is.
Yeah. Don't know if it'll be called Rush.
No. And it can't be new material, really, because Neil wrote the lyrics.
Yeah.
So it's got to be performing in some capacity.
Right.
Here on the Test for Echo tour, being able to go out without an opening act and getting that extra hour worth of playing time, we were able to do all of 2112. And songs like Natural Science, for example, which is also a long song.
You know, you lead me straight into my next question, Alex. Thank you. 21.
Is Natural Science a Casey classic?
I think it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I got it on my list, but I don't really ever play it because I'm always...
It's longer.
I'm always doubtful whether it's a Casey classic, but I guess it is.
It is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Do you realize what it means to Rush fans to hear that song live? Or do you have any idea?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's really why we did it.
You're talking about 2112?
Yes.
I'm sorry, because I interrupted. I need to ask.
Right,
I'm sorry.
Yep.
We wanted to play it, and we thought it would be great, but really for our audience, we knew the kind of weight it carries and thought that it would be just such a great thing to do.
Now, did you, you talked about the fact that you didn't have any opening acts on the Test for Echo tour. Is that something you think eventually when you guys, hopefully if and will, you go back out on the road that you'll keep it like that, you won't take openers out so you can just stretch out and do whatever you want each night?
Well, you know, we always felt it was very important to offer some kind of opportunity to young bands that were coming up, and that's what we did. But we felt after 20-some-odd years that maybe it was time to be a little selfish and play a little bit more. I think in future we would probably do the same. With 20 albums, I mean, it's impossible to really get a good balanced cross-section of all the material without having at least a few hours to do it. Before Test of Echo, we all came in with our own little set lists, and we had over 5 hours of material, and we whittled that down to 3.5 hours,
mm-hmm.
and from there we had to even cut it back another half hour.
Wow.
So I'm pretty sure that we would continue that way.
Let me ask you a really stupid question, Alex. Obviously, Rush has made enough money in their lives where you probably don't have to worry about much anything like this, but you recorded every night on the Test for Echo tour. Is that expensive to do, man, for a band like you guys?
Well, now it isn't. With technology and the state that it's in, it's much easier. In the past, with our past live records, you'd get a truck out, you know, you'd set up behind the gig every night, and it would be really taking a chance because you'd record 7 to 10 shows. You're so aware of the recording. There are always glitches that go on. So if you could get this song one night, that song another night, you know, that's sort of the way you put it together. Now with recording equipment being so compact and mobile, you can take a setup with you on the road every night.
Wow.
It just fits in some road cases, plug it in, and away you go, and you don't even think about the recording.
Hmm.
And that's really the ideal. You don't want to think about a recording when you're playing live.
Right, exactly. Let's switch gears and talk about where Rush is today. Of course, all Rush fans know that within the last year and a half, I guess, Neil Peart's daughter was killed in a car crash, and Neil's wife died earlier this year of breast cancer. How are all three of you just personally doing and handling with the situation, Alex?
Well, I can't tell you how difficult it's been. We're very, very close. It's been a terrible shock. Certainly for Neil, it's been very difficult. He's slowly on the road to healing. He's got a plan in mind of how he can get his strength back and get his feet back on the ground. And I think it'll take time, but I think ultimately he has a great love of life, and he will learn to you know, get back on his feet again, I think. Of course, he'll be a changed person for it.
Right.
And, you know, for Getty and myself, it's been difficult as well, but we haven't really, you know, worried about that so much. It's been our concern for Neil mostly. But as I said, you know, time is a great healer, and hopefully sometime in the new year we can sit down and talk about what sort of course we want to take
right.
future of the band.
And, of course, he did heal, and they did go out again.
He did. I read his book, mm-hmm. Ghost Rider, I believe, and that's when he rode his motorcycle all the way up to Alaska, all mm-hmm. the way down to Cabo, and talked about the experiences that he had, and that was part of his way of just dealing with what happened.
Yeah.
I mean you can't imagine what that's like.
No, I mean, for him to unplug like that completely
yeah.
and get out on the roadways back then, and that was before, well, no, I guess the cell phones, I don't know if there were cell phones around at that time.
97 or 98? I don't know.
If they were, but the network wasn't built out like it is
no.
now. So there were a lot of times he was in non-communicative with anybody.
Yes.
You know, they didn't know where he was for the longest
yeah.
time. Every
mm-hmm.
once in a while, they'd hear from him.
He sent a postcard.
Oh, he's still
or
alive.
Whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
You guys, you haven't even talked about anything regarding Rush as far as music or.
No, it's too premature really to talk about that. I know with Neil, it's not a priority on his list right now. He's
right.
rebuilding his whole life,
right?
And you know the band isn't important in the whole scheme of things right now. He needs to get strong again and be able to function as you know, close to the human being that he was before we'll even talk about the band. I know it's on his mind, and I know he wants to address the situation at some point, but right now he's building the foundation again.
And it's nice to be in a situation where you can do that.
Yes.
You know, he was in a band that was already successful, and
right.
you know, he was able to, you know, take some time off. Although the years or whatever that any band ends up not being able to do what they do is time lost,
right.
money lost, and
right,
time lost.
Right.
So it's expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How did you deal with it, Alex? Do you have family that you can just rely on, or did you do something to vent your feelings, or how does Alex Lifeson deal with
well,
tragedy like this?
I guess I ran to their aid. I spent a lot of time with Jackie, Neil's wife, in those first couple of weeks. It was a very...
What?
Keep going.
...training experience and very difficult. And, you know, I made it my goal to help her. Unfortunately, it didn't work out. It was a very depressing time and a very difficult thing to shake, and you couldn't stop thinking about them and
right.
and what they were going through. An experience, I think, that I've come out with a different feeling about people who are in a situation like that. I feel differently about death and how to deal with people that are surrounded by it. Most people are very, very afraid of dealing with it. And your true colors come out in a situation like this. There were certain people around them, and you know they'll live in Neil's heart forever. And there were others that were just too frightened by the whole thing. And it's an interesting experience to go through, one that you don't really want to repeat, but I think if I do, I'm better prepared for it.
Right. Now let's get away from that now and talk about. Did I hear something? The fact that you might have a solo record coming out, or were you going to work on some stuff, or did I totally misread that somewhere?
Well, you know, to be honest, I found it very difficult to get motivated to do any kind of music, writing, or playing. I hadn't played my guitar in a long time. I have a club here in Toronto, and I would go down and play on the weekends with the house band, but really for the last year, I probably went down once or twice.
Really?
But in the last month or so, I've just been, I don't know, re-energized by the whole thing. And I have a couple of things, a band out of Vancouver that's planning to go in the studio shortly. I may produce a record for them. I got a couple
anybody
of...
Anybody we know? Is it anybody we know?
I don't really want to say right now because we're still a little bit away from nailing the deal.
Okay.
But they're a young band, really good. I think it would be a great experience. I got a couple of scripts to give some thought to doing some soundtrack work for film. And then Victor was a great experience for me as
right,
well. I really
was.
Enjoyed that doing
that. Was
that
a good record, man.
And
that
I'd like to do
good.
That again. And I plan to. Whether it's going to be in the next month or so, I'm not sure. But eventually I'll get around to doing that.
All right, so what's your handicap in golf? We want to know.
I'm about a 13 right now.
Are you? So what, you shoot about 85, 86? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, anywhere from 82 to 86.
Yeah? Now,
that's where I was for a while. Yeah, very similar.
Yeah?
Do you do that every day when you're on the road if you have time? Do you play?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
being you're so lucky.
Being on the road is the perfect vehicle for getting your golf game in shape. I mean, touring is it's a very boring existence. You're pumped for those 3 hours that you work, but for the other 21 hours, you're waiting for those 3 hours. So if you can get yourself out and doing something that's distracting and takes a lot of time, then, you know, you're much healthier for it.
Right.
And golf is perfect. You're out there for 4 or 5 hours. You're on a beautiful golf course outside. It's great. It just sets the tempo for the whole day. So I've become quite addicted to playing golf on the road.
So whenever they would come to St. Louis, they would play at a private country club.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they play it at St. Louis Country Club. I know that. They've played Belle Reve.
Mm-hmm.
They would eat also. My friend fed them one night, Eric Brenner. He said they ate like Vikings. He said that was the term he used. Geddy Lee and Alex Lifeson came in, and they had wine and everything, and it was just really cool.
Oh, Alex is a golfer, too. I mean, Geddy's a golfer, too?
I don't think he... I'm not sure.
Because I never really heard any talking about him playing.
But maybe he played along with Alex. I don't know. Yeah, but I know they would dine together.
Or at least he'd meet him in the clubhouse for dinner or something for lunch.
Yep. You've been playing.
I've been playing for 7 years now.
Really? So have you played like Pebble Beach and...
Really? Yeah, so I've played so many great courses.
What about Augusta? Did you play Augusta?
No, I didn't play Augusta, but I've become friends with Lee Jansen over the last 5 years.
Ah, very, very good.
And Lee's promised me 2 tickets this year. And as a matter of fact, I just booked my hotel yesterday. So
all right.
I'm looking forward to it this year.
Well, I'll tell you what, man.
Can you imagine walking around the grounds of Augusta?
CNN.
You're already on Augusta National, one of the most hallowed grounds in the country as far as golfers are concerned, and you turn around and there's Alex Lifeson of Rush standing there. Talk about a double treat.
That would have been weird.
Let's come back to town. There's a couple people here that want to take you and Geddy on in a scramble.
Well, actually, I played, Belle Reve?
Belle Reve is
I played there a couple of times, and it is a beautiful golf course.
Yeah, that's an old course, too.
Yeah.
That's a nice course.
Yeah.
Well, it's good to talk to Alex Lifeson anytime, but it's always good to talk about golf and Rush and the new different stages, 3 CDs, live disc, and if you don't have it by now, I don't know what the hell you're waiting for. It's a great one. Alex, thanks for calling Casey today and hanging out, and good luck in the future, man.
My pleasure, Guy.
All right. Alex, thanks, man.
My pleasure. Have a very happy holiday.
You too.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Nice man.
There you go. Yeah, he's a nice guy.
Yeah, he and Geddy, they would do all the media stuff.
All of it.
Yeah, and Neil
never did a drop of it.
Yeah, rarely. Once in a while, he would do something.
Yeah, you'd see him on TV. You know, that's why when you would see him, you go, wow, there's Neil Peart. I want to hear what he has to say.
Yeah.
You know, but no.
Yeah, and they were always very nice, both of them, very nice people. So, this was not one of those 10-minute window interviews where he hopped off from you and went to another radio station and had to...
Right.
It was, this was you had him as long as you wanted him.
Yeah,
calling Casey in specific.
It was cool.
Yeah, good interview. It was fun.
Thank you. I mean, I didn't remember, as I said, I didn't remember talking to him, but I certainly didn't remember talking to him about what happened with Neil's wife and daughter, who they both tragically died within a year, and it was right on the heels of that. So that
and
was
some people
weird.
Might say that's kind of, well, that's egotistic. What do you mean you don't remember talking to Alex Lifeson of Rush? It's weird back then because these guys were somewhat available on a semi-regular basis, so... You're going to forget maybe of conversation here or there. I know I've forgotten some of the people I've talked to over the years.
Yeah.
And I wish there were tapes
of it. There's probably others that I've forgotten
about
that I'll discover, but I'm glad I found this one for sure.
Yeah. All right, there you go. That's episode 140 of the Casey Tapes. I'm John Hewlett. You can follow me on Twitter at STLUMan, and on Instagram, I'm Johnny Hewlett.
See you around. AMF.
Bye.
The KC Tapes with you, man, and Favaz. For more on the history of KC, go to KC95.com or the KC mobile app.